Oh, good afternoon, everybody. Now, I expect many of us have felt a sense of uncertainty at times over the past couple of years. In the early days of the pandemic, it was like everything we thought was just stable and good had just taken a tremendous knock, didn't it? And even the things that we never imagined we might lose or might be sort of restricted from us were taken away. And I'm thinking particularly of just the ability to get together. I remember one of my customers, his, I guess elderly, but retired mother, just said, well, I just want everything to go back to normal. All I really enjoy is just a meeting with my friends. You know, she expected she might lose other things, but never thought she'd lose even the freedom just to meet up with her friends. Now, I remember my dad saying, and he's 91 next week, so he was very conscious of World War II and so on, but he said it's like there's an enemy out there, but you can't see it. And I think maybe it was a bit like being in an occupied country during the war. There was an enemy there, and they were armed, and they had the ability to hurt you, but actually all they were doing was taking your liberty away and enforcing like a curfew. I think maybe it felt a bit like that. Now, we're beginning to come to the end of that, I think, aren't we? I think there's some sort of hope about the end of the pandemic. And just as we're getting out the other end, we've now got a war in Europe. And there's a new sense of uncertainty, isn't there? And then there's climate change, isn't there? Something that concerns a lot of people, are very anxious about. Now, the passage we read this evening seems to have all these themes. Verses 7 to 8 says there'll be wars and rumours of wars, that nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. And then it speaks of, in verse 8, of earthquakes and famines. Haven't they seemed more frequent in our news items over recent years? And then it gets a little bit more personal, doesn't it, down to earth. So Jesus warns his disciples that they're going to be flogged in the synagogues and questioned. And verse 13 says that Christians will be hated. Now, in this church, there's an organisation which we're connected to and support called Open Doors. And what they do is look at persecution of Christian people across the world. And on their website, it says that last year, 5,898 people were murdered for being a Christian, for their Christian faith, or martyred, we should say. And also, they say that 360 million Christians worldwide experience high levels of persecution, and it's the highest levels they've recorded in almost 30 years, so it's getting worse. And just by sort of comparison, that's about 1 in 7 people with a Christian faith in the world are experiencing a high level of persecution. Okay. I'm sorry, this just go on a bit, get a bit worse, a bit gloomier picture. Speaks of family life. Says brother will betray brother. Children will betray, will rebel against their parents. Now, maybe you're enjoying a weekend before you got here today, but this is a church service. Maybe it's going to get better. Well, actually, it gets worse. As if wars and natural disasters, social unrest, and family life broken down wasn't enough, the Bible here tells us that in these end times, it's going to get a lot worse. In verse 14, it spoke of that abomination that causes desolation appearing. Some sort of hideous ruler, so bad that it says, as soon as he appears, just run for the hills, go to the mountains. It says, if you're on the rooftop of your house, imagine there were those houses had like a flat roof and be on the top, don't even bother to go down into the house to collect your belongings, just get away. And verse 19, did you see it says there, those will be days of distress unequaled from the beginning. So this speaks of a very distressing time, okay? Now, can it get any worse than that? So stay with me. Now, verses 24 to 25 says this, following that distress, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from the sky. I bet a few of us have read that centuries ago, when there was a solar eclipse, it was a terrifying thing. Before there was an understanding about planets aligning, that sort of things. Imagine if you were out in the middle of the day and the sun went dark. I mean, maybe some thought the gods were, you know, calling time on the earth, or it was something. It would have been a desperately frightening experience. And here it says that the sun will lose its light and the stars will fall from the sky. Now, where do we look for reassurance in difficult times? Perhaps we can start the PowerPoint, that's right. Is that me? Yeah. Hopeless. That was the title of the talk. So I didn't broadcast it too much in case no one turned up. But where do we look for in difficult times? Now, it's interesting how the passage starts in verse 1. It says, as Jesus was leaving the temple, one of his disciples said to him, look, teacher, what massive stones, what magnificent buildings. Now, they were looking at the temple. Now, you can read about this temple outside of the Bible, outside of Christian writing. This is historical details about the temple. And it was truly huge. Now, to give an idea of how big it was, this is Buckingham Palace, of course. And it's 108 metres wide across the front, or 350 feet. It's 108 metres wide, and it goes back 120 metres. Okay, and that's how big Buckingham Palace is. I'm sure most of us have been there and looked through those gates. Now, here's a diagram, an impression of what the temple looked like. Now, it doesn't look very clear, but this temple is actually comprised of a number of buildings, so the overall temple is a collection of buildings, but it's 450 metres wide and 360 metres deep, so about three times both dimensions of Buckingham Palace. And I've read that some of the stones were so huge, it's reckoned that modern cranes today would not be able to lift them. So how they got them in place is a mystery, but they were huge stones, and that comment from the disciple there. Now, occasionally, I go into London Bridge, and I'm always struck by how impressive the Shard is. I'm sure you've seen the Shard, most of you, or all of you. It's an amazing building. It's just like a shard of glass towering up. It always catches my eye. It's magnificent. Now, it's 310 metres tall, and it's Europe's largest building. Now, I think it's a great symbol of achievement, isn't it? The technology in making a building like this, and just how impressive it is. Now, I always try to get a photo from the bottom looking up, and I don't think it does it justice, but when you're standing at the bottom looking up, there's this shard of glass going to the sky, and this is one I just picked off the web, but it's a tremendous it's a tremendous building. Now, as I walked through the city, and I remember particularly sort of after the sort of first couple of waves of lockdown and the pandemic, as I was walking through the city, there's one after the other of tall tower blocks, office buildings. And I remember feeling it was sort of a bit reassuring because I thought, well, there is commerce and there's trade. I'm in one of the sort of foremost capitals of the world. And I thought, well, maybe there is stability and security here. I found that I really did find it sort of strangely reassuring. But then look at what Jesus says to his disciples in verse 2. He says that not one stone of that temple will be left on another. And again, you can read about the destruction of the temple outside of Christian writing or the Bible. Now, about 40 years later, it was pretty well flattened. So that immense structure was pretty well flattened, not one stone left on another. So where is their hope? Well, in the early days of the pandemic, I remember it was like sort of February time, wasn't it? It was early in the year. And some were saying this could be bad for about 3 or 4 months. And I just thought, well, okay, just write off spring, but at least we'll get to the summer and enjoy the summer. But of course, if new variants came in and new waves of lockdown, as it continued, it began to feel like, will this virus ever get suppressed? And there's a sense in which hope itself gets smothered, doesn't it? The sense of hope just gets smothered. Now, how many people have seen the film The Shawshank Redemption? Right, Shawshank Redemption, right. Now, I would have played a clip, but copyright disallowed us. But there's a scene, it's a brilliant scene, I think it's one of the greatest scenes of all movies, but it's a point where the main character, now of course he's in prison, he's been wrongly convicted, okay, so he is innocent, he's been wrongly convicted of a crime, and there's a scene where, because he's a very clever accountant, he gets access to the office, and one day he locks himself in, gets a record player, gets a beautiful piece of operatic music, this singer, gets the tannoy, the microphone, and broadcast the music across the jail, which was never allowed. And so he wanted all the prisoners to hear this beautiful music, you know, in this environment they lived in. Now, he got put in the solitary confinement. You know, this would have been a prison in the sort of 40s. It wouldn't have been very nice for about a month. Anyway, the scene is this. He comes out of solitary confinement, joins the other inmates for lunch, and they say, of course, what was it like being in there for a month? And he said, it wasn't so bad. I had Mr. Mozart with me. Mozart's a composer, of course. He said, well, did they let you take the record player in with you? He goes, no, it's in here. And Red, who's Morgan Freeman, says, what are you talking about? And basically he says, hope. Hope. And Morgan Freeman, Red, says, don't talk about hope in here. Hope is a dangerous thing. So he says, hope is a dangerous thing. Now, if the Bible was a self-help book or a counselling book, and we've just read all these disastrous things and terrible things are going to happen, it would probably say things like, be kind to yourself, be kind to others, every cloud has a silver lining, or maybe focus on World Kindness Day, which really does exist. You haven't missed it, it's not till November, but there is World Kindness Day. So if the Bible was a self-help, sort of encouraging book, it would probably have things like this. Now, I don't think World Kindness Day is a bad thing, but is hope a dangerous thing? Ever heard the phrase, a dead to hope? Perhaps one of the most disappointing sensations in life is when you really have your hopes up for something and your hopes are dashed. So dare we look at what happens next in this passage? Well, there's another dramatic event. And it's in verses 26 to 27. It says this. At that time, people will see the Son of Man. That's another description of Jesus. People will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory. And he will send his angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of the heavens. Now, that terrifying appearing of the abomination that causes desolation, we think is the Antichrist, it says he will set foot on the earth. But when Jesus Christ returns, it will be like he just wraps up the whole earth. It's not just sets foot on it, but wraps everything up, just gathers up everything. Now, this passage today is leading up to the final days before the first Easter. Okay, that's where we are. Okay. And it's to the time when Jesus will go to the cross and be crucified on the cross. But here, of course, he's looking further ahead to his ultimate return, that final return. I just want to focus on that a little bit further. There's a bigger description of this return in another part of the Bible, in 2 Thessalonians. And I'll put it on the screen. It says this. It's a bit small. God is just. He will pay back trouble to those who trouble you and give relief to you who are troubled, and to us as well. And it says this. This will happen when the Lord Jesus is revealed from heaven in blazing fire with his powerful angels. Now, this is a dramatic event. Now, I'm trying to think of something that might help us get a glimpse of what that might be like. And think of another film reference. Now, I'm going to admit, I'm not really a fan of Lord of the Rings, which I know is a great piece of literature and so on. But I went along because a few from the church were going, and I was fairly disinterested. But then there's this scene with a battle. And the goodies, shall we say, are really struggling. And there's this horrible sort of enemy attacking them. But then Gandalf appears. And this white stallion and his white robes and his long white beard. And he's got this brilliant white scepter. And he charges. And as he does, there's this brilliance of light. The whole screen goes completely white. And you can see the enemy just squinting. They can't see. And it's this fantastic picture of goodness just absolutely smothering all that's bad, just wiping it out, and the enemy just cannot stand against his light, let alone weapons. So it's a tremendous scene of Gandalf arriving. Very, very vivid impression it's made of me. So I wonder whether it's something like that. That's just a glimpse. But then this piece here in Thessalonians goes on to say this. The day he comes, this is Jesus, the day he comes to be glorified in his holy people and to be marvelled at among all those who have believed. Now, I just want to reflect on that a little bit. Now, I've mentioned how hope might be something that can be diminished or suppressed in us. But I think a human experience that's even rarer than hope is a sense of wonder. Now, what is it that we truly say that we marvel at? Now, earlier this week, ahead of this service, what I did was I messaged just a few friends at random and asked them the question, can you describe something that made you marvel or gave you a sense of wonder? And I said, no problem if you say no or can't think of anything, just your immediate reaction. The first reaction I had was, sorry, I can't think of anything. Now, it's actually not easy, is it? It's not an easy question. What? It really encapsulates you so much. Now, I had a few answers. A lot of people said about nature. One did say about the night sky and how their granddaughter loves to look through a telescope at the moon. One said that they're absolutely fascinated by bridges and ships, just how they could be made, and they sort of marvel at that. So I had a few reactions. But as I say, that first one was, I just can't think of anything. Now, we might tend to associate wonder and marvelling at something that a child feels. I've managed to get this picture. Often something a child feels, but we often say that it's a sensation we lose the older we get, the more we're aware, the more knowledge we have. That adults don't tend to experience it. I don't know if you can see those quotes. These are just quotes about some songs. There's a childlike sense of wonder. See, it refers to it as a childlike sense being wonder and exploration in these songs. The responsibilities of being an adult mean that we can lose our childlike sense of wonder and possibility. This is from the Times or Sunday Times. These aren't quotes that I'm making up. So generally speaking, we tend to think of a child perhaps having a sense of wonder, but something you tend to lose as an adult. Now, we see here that when Jesus returns in this great entrance of power and significant glory, that people will marvel. Now, people marvel at Jesus a lot. There's many references to this, and I'm going to speak even faster now and read a few. But it says, Matthew 7:28, the crowds were amazed at his teaching. Luke 2, amazed at his understanding and his answers. Luke 4, amazed at the gracious words that came from his lips. Luke 9, while everyone was marveling at all that Jesus did. Matthew 12, all the people were astonished. When was the last time you were astonished at something? Or I was. Mark 5:42, people were completely astonished. Now, I think one that's really interesting, someone who did marvel at who Jesus was at Easter, and I'm sure we'll get to this. There was a centurion who would have been an enemy of Jesus. It was a Roman centurion at the cross, looking up at Jesus on the cross, something that looks helpless and hopeless. He says, surely this was the Son of God. Something about seeing Jesus there made him marvel. Maybe something for us to consider is, do we marvel at who Jesus is? Does it captivate us with wonder? Now, that video at the beginning, that was actually one of the responses I had to what is it that makes you wonder and marvel, and I thought it was a helpful thing to play. And what I wrote down was exactly what Sarah said. It makes you feel insignificant. So how does the Bible, looking at the Bible, or the Christian message, address any sense of hopelessness or feeling insignificant? Now, this passage that we've read is one of the most debated passages in the Bible. People are saying, well, what does it mean? What timing is there? And so on. But I think the real relevance is in a very little clue. It's almost hidden. It's in verse 19. It tells us something very important about who God is. It's right in one of those very worst scenes. That verse 19 I read earlier, it says, those will be days of distress unequaled. If you go on, it says, those will be days of distress unequaled from the beginning when God created the world. So firstly, God is the creator and he initiated time. And of course, then we've read about his return, that second coming when he wraps up the world. Verse 27, that's when Jesus returns and wraps up the earth and calls time. So he initiates time and ends time. So the Christian message transforms how we view human existence. Now, the alternative to this has been expressed very well by a very good Christian speaker called Alistair Begg. And I couldn't word this any better, so I thought I'd borrow his. He said, either the Lord is creator, that gives significance, or we are living on an insignificant planet with a vast and incomprehensible emptiness. Just like that video which made us perhaps feel insignificant, that would be true. It would be insignificant, an insignificant planet, and have no purpose or value. So what can we do? Well, here we are. We're in the event leading up to the first Easter. Jesus has told his disciples that he is going to stand trial and be handed over to be crucified. Now, maybe that sound is hopeless to them, but Jesus is taking their focus way beyond that time to much further ahead when he will return this great blaze of glory. Now, we all like to know when things are going to happen, don't we? It could be very simple things like when's the next bus going to come along? Or maybe bigger things like, when will this pandemic end? When will this war be over? But we're simply told that no one knows the day or hour that Jesus will return, and that we're just to watch. And it gives that illustration of a master in his house. His servants go away, and it says they must be ready for his return. They've got to be looking out for his return. But it's not a fearful watching. It's not like when I was younger and did something bad at home, my mum would say, wait till your father gets home. It wasn't that fearful watching like that. It was hopeful watching. Watching for that one, just like those that hope for Gandalf. We're hoping for the Saviour, for the one who will be that ultimate rescuer. Now, just finish by saying that Christian hope is not a dangerous thing. Okay, Romans 5:5 says this: hope does not disappoint us. And it says it's because God has shed his love abroad in our hearts by the Holy Spirit.